Meditieren, Yoga, Joggen, nichts entspannt mich.
Echt? Mich entspannt meine Steuer total.
Steuer? Wie Finanzamt? Die Steuererklärung?
Ja, ich habe ganz locker über 1000 Euro zurückbekommen.
Hast du geheime Connections?
Nö, nur die Wieso-Steuer-App.
Wow, und das ist einfach?
Klar, die macht fast alles automatisch.
Plötzlich fühle ich mich so entspannt.
Hol dir dein Geld zurück. Tiefenentspannt mit Wieso-Steuer.
Stu does America.
My Blaze Originals documentary is out. Countdown to the next aviation disaster. Perfectly timed for the biggest travel week of the year. Get excited about it. It's available now at blazetv.com. Blazeoriginals.com/Stu is where you can go to subscribe. You'll get $30 off. If you use the code DEI, which is what they're using to make decisions about air traffic controllers, not a good idea. Not a good idea. We'll go into all of that at some point here this week. Brian Lilly is going to join us from Canada to tell us why Justin Trudeau needs to go. Electric vehicle industry is looking to a future under President Trump. That should be interesting. But we're going to start by doing the truth about polling. And actually, we're going to do something a little bit different this week. We're calling this behind the scenes unpopular monologue week. Just things we're just going to say, and a lot of people aren't going to like them, and we're just going to go ahead and do it anyway. I mean, you can't get mad at me this week, right? It's Thanksgiving. You have to be thankful, even if you're not thankful at all for this stupid show. You just still have to at least pretend you're being thankful, right? So we're going to do some unpopular monologues this week and see how that goes. And we're going to do kind of like the truth. The truth about, you know, some uncomfortable truth, for example. And I mean, if you think about uncomfortable truth, you might think of course, the truth about Cats and Dogs, the movie with somehow a romantic comedy with Uma Thurman and Janine Garofalo starring in it, which makes absolutely no sense. How did that get greenlit? I don't know. But you want to talk about an uncomfortable truth, that might be number one. We're not going to do any monologues about Janine Garofalo movies, that I promise you. But all of this, thinking about this week, was making me think of an old bit by Louis C.K., where he talks about something that we all kind of say, but then there's this other thing over here, that kind of uncomfortable truth, that kind of true. He called it, of course, but maybe. And he would go through and say like something that we all kind of say out loud, and then you have this kind of dark thought in the corner, and it's like, but maybe this other thing is true. And that's kind of what I want to talk about this week. Like, you know, these things that everyone talks about all the time, everyone says is true, everyone constantly says all the time, and then maybe there's another way we should be thinking about this. Let me start with what everybody says all the time. And this particular version of this story is going to come to you from Jon Stewart.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to The Daily Show. It hasn't been completely called yet. We don't exactly know what all the results are going to be. Our time is running out. I do want to very quickly send a quick message to all the pollsters, the election pollsters. Me. I don't ever want to from you again, ever. I don't ever want to hear, we've corrected to the overcorrection of the voters. You don't know about and I don't care for you.
There you go. There you go, Jon Stewart. These bastard pollsters. They really screwed us over this time. And you got the additional comedy factor. This is like one of the classic Jon Stewart monologues where the whole joke is the swear. Like, you're not supposed to see a news person swear. That's the entire amount of the humor I'm putting in this segment. That is it. So there you go, Jon Stewart, a legend broadcaster there, giving you his take on pollsters. And look, it's not just Jon Stewart. Literally everybody I talk to all the time says this sort of stuff. Like, oh, these bad pollsters, are they going to get it right? They never get it right. They're always wrong. And like, I don't know. I guess the central thing people are going to remember when it comes to pollsters from this particular election is going to be one specific poll. And it's kind of understandable, to be fair. Ann Selzer, Selzer was this pollster who the polling nerd community propped up as like the greatest pollster of all time. And she had some successes, particularly earlier in her career. And she did, like, for example, call the pretty early the Barack Obama rise over Hillary Clinton and John Edwards.
name from the past, back in the 2008 primary season in Iowa. She had some hits. They were a long time ago, most of them. She's struggled more recently and then really, really struggled. In fact, struggling to the point of she's no longer a pollster and sells her to end election polling after a 16-point miss in the final Iowa survey. And it wasn't just a miss. You know, if she had said, hey, you know, Trump's going to win Iowa by only two, and her last poll, I think, before her second to last poll said that Trump was going to win by four. And even that was shocking. Like, wait a minute, 4 points in Iowa? What is there something that I'm missing about Iowa? I will say from the beginning, I didn't buy even a 4-point difference when it came to Iowa. It didn't make any sense to me. I heard Steve Dace, who knows Iowa as well as anybody. He said there's no way this is true. It didn't feel true. Then they released the next poll and Seltzer says Kamala Harris is going to win Iowa. Now, that seems completely insane, though. If you do go back to the Barack Obama era, I mean, he did win Iowa. I mean, is it true? Is something changing here? They were trying to make this case. It has something to do with abortion polling and that women were really going to turn on Donald Trump. None of that happened. He won, I think, by more than his previous two elections in Iowa. It was, I think, a 13-point victory for Donald Trump, a 16-point miss for Ann Selzer. And that's pretty much what everyone remembers about polling for the 2024 election. But like, and that's what we all say, but maybe they actually did fine. Maybe polls in 2024 were just totally normal and fine. That's kind of what the data says. This piece is from David Beiler. This piece is on MSNBC.com, but David has a history in conservative media. He's a data journalist. He says, despite what you may have been hearing, the polls did well. No, the data wasn't perfect, and the industry still faces long-term challenges. But we've proven that we can get close to the mark, which is the best that we can reasonably expect from polling. And, like, you can kind of cherry-pick stuff if you want. You can go through and obviously find the Iowas of the world that were really, really, really wrong from Ann Selzer. But we wanted to avoid cherry-picking, so we came up with our own product for polling this cycle called the PulseCast. You remember me blabbing about it on pretty much daily. This is what it looked like for the whole cycle. It had Kamala Harris starting behind, then in the blue, rising above Donald Trump for a period of time as she was getting announced as the candidate. Donald Trump closing that gap until the first debate. Then Harris riding a little bit of a debate pump until basically the time where Tim Walz and J.D. Vance debated. Trump came back, took the lead, and held the lead until the end. That's kind of the story. And at the very end, what PulseCast and many other polling averages predicted was a narrow lead for Donald Trump. Now, when you look at the results, some people are looking at this like, oh, this is a blowout. It wasn't close at all. And I've heard some people describe this as a narrow landslide. I think I would just say it was a relatively, generally speaking, pretty close election. Let's go through the results and look at it. And I will say, it's important to understand what to expect out of polls. I will save you the entire polling rant that you may have heard me give 20 times during the election, but polls are generalized instruments. They don't give you specifics, they give you general themes. If you look at them and try to learn general themes from the polls, you'll probably do pretty well with the polls. If you're looking at them to give you detail down to the 0.1%, generally speaking, you're probably gonna get let down by them from time to time. That is the truth about polling. It is not an easy thing to do. It gets harder and harder every single year these polling companies attempt to do it. And at the end of the day, like, I think they did when you think about what we should expect out of polls and what we got from them this cycle, I think we should be generally pleased. These are not surgical instruments. They're general instruments. And if you look at polls and try to get general things from them, you'll probably be generally happy. Let's look at the polling and how it came in. Arizona, the Real Clear Politics average was Donald Trump plus 2.8 points. So Donald Trump winning by 2.8. In reality, Donald Trump won by 5. So a couple points off, but the right winner and a couple points off. Now remember, the margin of error for most of these polls is 3 or 4 points. So within the margin of error, and a couple points off. Next up, Nevada. Real Clear to Politics average, Trump plus 0.6 points. The actual, Trump plus 4. He won by a little bit more than was expected, but again, the winner was predicted accurately by the polls on average, and it was a couple points off, and that one a little bit over 3 points. Over to North Carolina, the Real Clear Politics average predicted Donald Trump plus 1.2 points. The actual winner, Donald Trump plus 3 points. So a miss of 1.8 points. I mean, I don't know that you'd expect anything more from a poll. That's completely fine. Georgia, Real Clear Politics average, Trump plus 1.3 points. The actual number, Donald Trump plus 2. So it missed by less than a point. I mean, there's nothing wrong with that. That's actually totally fine. It's not going to be exact. Pretty close. Pennsylvania. Now we got these blue wall states. These are important. Donald Trump's got to pick one of these off to win the election. Even if he won all those previous states I just talked about, it's not enough. He's got to pick one of these states off. Well, Pennsylvania, the Real Clear Politics average had Trump plus 0.4 points. And the actual, Donald Trump plus 1.7 points. I mean, it was pretty close. Missed by 1.3 points and got the winner correct. I think that's a win when it comes, generally speaking, to pollsters. They look at that and say, okay, we were within, you know, about half of the margin of error. We were pretty close. Michigan, Real Clear Politics average, Harris plus 0.5. Actual, Trump plus 1.4. And here you see the first time that we see the actual winner being incorrect. Harris actually wins in the average for Real Clear Politics, Trump plus 1.4. But that miss is only 1.9 points total. It missed by 1.9. Again, a less than 2 point miss in a poll of a state is totally within the realm of what we should expect from polls. If you're getting angry because it missed by 1.9 points, you are the problem. It's not the polls. We can't get angry at that. And you might say, well, what I want from the polls is what I want is the winner. And it gave me the wrong winner there. And what I'm telling you now is what you're asking for from polls is not what they're designed to give you. They are designed to give you these numbers, and those numbers within a margin of error is what they're designed to give you. And you might say, well, what's the point of them if they can't give us all of the answers of these close states? Yes, exactly. If your point and what you want out of a poll is to get the exact estimate of a close state, you're going to be disappointed about half the time. In this particular case, we've only had one case where it's actually disappointed you and gave you the wrong result, which was Michigan. And I mean, I'm not surprised. Honestly, I thought he was going to lose Michigan, too. That was one of the states that I got wrong when predicting this election result. And partially it was because of what they did with the election laws in Michigan. I thought they were unfavorable changes to Donald Trump. RFK Jr. remained on the ballot in Michigan, which kind of it did pull some votes away, but not enough for Donald Trump to lose. It was not surprising that polls said that. And I was, you know, it was a good win for Donald Trump. But like, this wasn't a massive miss for pollsters. And it was the only state so far out of the swing states that it was actually wrong. And finally, the last one was Wisconsin, where Donald Trump was predicted to win by Real Clear Politics of 1.2%. And in reality, Donald Trump won by 0.9%. So this one actually went a little bit against Trump compared to the Real Clear Politics average, but only by 0.3 points. I mean, they almost nailed it exactly. Now, what is Jon Stewart yelling at the camera and swearing about? What exactly is he thinking? Real Clear Politics picked 6 of those 7 states correct. What are we supposed to expect out of pollsters? Think of what they're doing here. Honestly, they're trying to predict an entire national election based on making phone calls and getting people to respond to texts and ads and pulling them online, trying all new sorts of new things. They're getting approximately 1%, if they're lucky, who are actually responding. It's a freaking miracle they can even come close. And they called 6 out of the 7 states accurately. And what we get is Jon Stewart swearing at the camera saying how bad they are. It's nonsense. The polls did completely fine. Nate Silver pointed this out as well. The polls did fine, even pretty good. Not great, but average to slightly below average by historical standards. No big upsets. They got a lot right about how the electorate was changing, and Democrats consistently ignored the clues they provided. That's accurate. Now, he had his own polling averages. This is how he showed it. What he showed it was a national average of Harris plus 1, the actual margin, about 1.5 for Trump. So about a 2.5 point miss, about a 2.6% miss in Michigan, 2.9% in Wisconsin, 1.5% in Pennsylvania, 1.2% in Georgia, 2.5% miss in Nevada, North Carolina, a 2.2% miss, and then in Arizona, a little bit over a 3% miss, a 3.1% miss, all pretty much within the margin of error. And I will say a prediction from Nate Silver's averages as well that had Donald Trump winning the election. Like that, I know it's boring and you're not supposed to get, you're supposed to get mad and you're supposed to scream, but like in reality, like they did completely fine. Now we have seen misses before. They're not completely fine every single time. The polls missed pretty badly in 2016 and they missed pretty badly in 2020. However, they did pretty well in 2012. They did pretty well in 2014. They did pretty well in 2018. They did pretty well in 2022. We all remember 2016, and I think that's really the central part of this. When you look back at 2016 for a second, 2016 was a pretty close election. There was a pretty overwhelming belief that Donald Trump was going to lose that election, though I believed he was very much, his chances being were undercut. I didn't think he was going to win, but I did think he had probably a 40% chance of winning when most people were saying it was more like 10 or 15. I think Nate Silver had it at like 27. I thought he had a chance, but he was still the underdog going in, and he did wind up winning. That first election, though, is Donald Trump. He's running as a first-time candidate, a candidate that no one has ever seen anything like him before. I think you'd agree. He's a pretty unique figure in our politics. A guy who's coming from being a reality show host, rising through, having a shocking victory in a primary, and wound up beating a, let's be honest about it, terrible candidate. It was a surprise, but like, it's not exactly shocking they'd get that one wrong. And in 2020, actually, their miss was worse than in 2016. The polls missed by more in 2020 than they did in 2016. They just happened to predict Joe Biden was going to win, so people don't really remember it as well. They had him winning by, you know, whatever, 7 or 8, and he only won by 4. And you know, some of the polls, especially in some of those swing states, were much, much closer than the polls believed. There was a pretty significant mess. But again, like, it was in the middle of a pandemic. Half the country was still staying home. Most Democrats were still panicked and wearing masks and, you know, seeing how many different needles they could fit into their arms at the same time. It was a weird time. I'm not surprised if you're going to miss pretty badly, it would be in 2020. Is that an excuse? Well, I guess it kind of is. But they don't deserve any, like, special treatment. We should judge them based on their results. There were bad misses in 2016, bad misses in 2020. But generally speaking, considering how difficult of work this is to do, polls are fine. That's a boring, boring answer, but a truthful one. They've done pretty much okay. And if you look at where these polls called 49 out of the 50 states correctly on the Real Clear Politics average, it's pretty good. Pretty good. Now, you might say, well, a lot of those states I knew were going to go that way. Well, one of the reasons you know that they were going to go that way is because of polling. Like, polling showed that New York was going to go to Donald Trump. You're going to go to Hillary Clinton, of course, then Joe Biden, and now Kamala Harris. Predicted a large win for the Democrats in all three of those elections. And I got a lot of people telling me, you know what, I think Donald Trump's going to take New York. Remember that? You see that rally? You've got the Madison Square Garden. You've got the big rally in Harlem. Like, I think he might take it. And I said, I don't think it's going to happen. I don't think he's going to win New York. But what we did pick up in both polls and the reaction to real world stuff was that it was getting closer. I think Trump lost it by maybe 12 points, which was much less than the 20-point type margins we've been used to seeing in New York. There really was movement in New York. There really was movement in New Jersey. There really was movement in a lot of these different racial groups. A lot of that was shown in polls leading up to the election. What it didn't show, and it's never going to show, is going to be the difference between a 0.6 percent win and a 0.4% loss. When you're depending on it for that sort of granular detail, you will be disappointed. But it's kind of true that there just is a situation here where we just expect too much from pollsters. When they get it wrong, they typically make excuses, which is annoying. I mean, Ann Seltzer was doing this. Well, maybe like my poll actually changed the electorate, and that's why that's not true. She just was wrong. This happens. the way polls are set up, only about 95% of polls are supposed to fall within the margin of error. Some of them are just massive misses. Maybe it was even something else with her. Maybe she had the strategy completely wrong. Maybe she just completely blew it. We don't know exactly what the reason was, but that's just one poll. It's one. That's it. It's one freaking poll. And so one poll will always have the opportunity to be completely wrong. So I say it this way. Of course we bitch about the polls. Of course we complain all the time about how terrible they are and how they never get it right and pollsters are bad. Of course that's what we do. But maybe it's a hard thing to do. And maybe we expect too much. And maybe in 2024, the reason Donald Trump won the election is because he won the election. And the polls kind of said it would be a close win of the election for Donald Trump. So, of course, we're going to complain about the polls, but maybe they did just fine.
Kaffee in seiner besten Form mit der neuen Cubo One Kapselmaschine von Tchibo. In jeder Cubo-Kapsel steckt Spitzenkaffee aus besonderen Anbaugebieten. Für Espresso, Kaffeecreme oder Kaffee Grande auf Knopfdruck. Die neue Cubo One überzeugt mit Premium-Design, kompakter Größe und kleinem Einstiegspreis ab 29 Euro. Dank innovativer Press-Brew-Technologie wird jede Tasse besonders aromatisch mit samtiger Creme. Entdecke jetzt die Cubo-Kapselmaschinen in deiner Tchibo-Filiale und auf tchibo.de.
I want to bring in Brian Lilly. He is the host of the Full Comment podcast and columnist for the Toronto Sun. His newest piece is For the Good of Canada, Trudeau Simply Has to Go. You can find a link to it on my Twitter page. Brian, how you doing, man?
I'm doing well, Stu. Doing well. Frustrated that this guy could be our prime minister for almost another year. Because you really should be going now.
Yeah, I mean, and you make quite the case here. Before we get into his responsibility and all of this, can you just kind of paint the picture of what is going on? I mean, I'm seeing footage all over social media of what looks like chaos in the streets of Canada. What is happening?
Well, same thing that's happened in many major American cities, but with a complete lack of leadership, especially from some of the federal leaders like Justin Trudeau, some of the municipal leaders, the city leaders here in Toronto. They've been horrible because they rely on this Hamas supporting base to get elected. In Montreal, where we saw the riots on the weekend, I think that mayor, Valerie Plante, she's even worse. But the prime minister represents a district in Montreal. He's a Montreal boy. And it took him until just shortly after noon on Saturday to even post something about it, because he was too busy dancing to Taylor Swift on Friday night here in Toronto. Montreal had cars burning, windows smashed at the convention center, businesses, rioting in the streets, and all because it's described by the wire services as an anti-NATO protest. Well, no, they were protesting outside of a meeting of NATO allies. But what they were protesting is Israel's existence. And there were people making the Hitler salute, saying the final solution is coming for you. Again, just targeting of Jews, Jewish businesses, Jewish institutions in a city that's long had a large Jewish population. It's untenable. And it took the prime minister until the next day. It's his area. He should have said something. He shouldn't have been seen on social media dancing, busting a move to Taylor Swift.
And it seems like the government of Canada, Trudeau specifically, has some sort of level of affinity toward looking at this the same way that many in the streets did, right? I mean, I'm not saying he's saying the crazy stuff that some of the protesters are saying about Hitler, but like this idea that the International Criminal Court is going to arrest Netanyahu arrested if he visits a country. This is the type of stuff that should be just dismissed immediately by any competent leader.
And you guys have a leader in the White House currently, not the guy who's about to come in, the guy who's there. His own party forced him out thinking he wasn't competent mentally anymore. His statement on this was bang on. Ignore this. This is not serious. And Justin Trudeau couldn't even do that. I was standing just feet from him. I was at his media event last Thursday when he was asked the question, well, The ICC has issued arrest warrants if Benjamin Netanyahu comes to Canada, which he's done before. I met him in Ottawa many years ago. If he comes to Canada, would you allow the or expect police to carry out those warrants? And he said yes. I was flabbergasted. I mean, you expect them just to say, no, this is a flawed process. The International Criminal Court has strayed from the values that were there when we helped establish it. I mean, the Americans, you guys were right to never join it. Canada joined with looking, as we always do at the UN, through some rose-colored glasses. And this is a prosecution brought about by South Africa, funded by Iran, denouncing Israel. How did we expect this was going to go? They won't issue the arrest warrants for any of the still living leaders of Hamas who are living now in Turkey, our supposed NATO allies backyard. Trudeau should have said no to that. Instead, he said yes. Lindsey Graham on Sean Hannity on Friday night said, if any ally does that, we will crush your economy. I don't think that is should be taken as an idle threat coming from Lindsey Graham. Mm.
You know, it's fascinating, you know, watching Trudeau from afar. I mean, we see the bubblings of the scandals, right? You know, obviously, you go back to the blackface scandal he dealt with. You have the situation with the truckers, where he was incredibly harsh on these people in that period. And like, I guess I don't get it. Like, I mean, do the Canadian people look at this guy and be like, this guy's doing a good job? What are the results for the Canadian people?
Well, he's his inflation, you know, every country's dealt with inflation, but inflation in Canada was worse than the United States. Food inflation, that's where most of us really notice it, right? You go to the grocery store and what does it cost for the stuff you normally put in your cart? It's 36% faster. Food inflation was 36% faster in Canada than the United States. Mm. So yeah, people are feeling the pinch, but they're not in love with Trudeau anymore. So he won in 2015. He won a majority government. He had the most seats in parliament. The next time he wins a minority government, which means he's got to rely on another party to vote with him. That was 2019. That lasted about a year and a half, almost 2 years. He calls another election in the middle of the pandemic and weaponizes vaccines. He went from saying, look, we're a country that doesn't believe you should be forced to get a vaccine, to coming out with policies saying, if you don't get a vaccine, you will not be allowed to travel. We are imposing all kinds of restrictions on the unvaccinated. You can't leave the country. You can't get on a plane, a train, a boat that goes between provinces. Not many, but there are some. He just shut down everything. He said, if you don't get a vaccine and you work for the federal government, you will lose your job. He won an even smaller minority then. Right now, he's at 21% in the polls, tied with the Socialist Party. And Pierre Poilievre and the Conservatives, people are ready for that. They want change. They want change from his sanctimonious outbursts, his lecturing. They want a break from his economic policies, which are a disaster. Government spending has gone up 60% under this guy. Inflation over that same time period, 22%. So all he's done is hire a bunch of civil servants who are working from home, questionable whether they're actually doing their jobs. And we're paying far much more and not getting better service.
So, Brent, do Canadians like to look at the situation and say, okay, like we went down the wrong road. We've gone the wrong direction. We've put too much faith in a central government and are having somewhat of a ideological awakening? Or is it just one of these situations where they're saying, okay, this guy and his government is incompetent. They're doing a bad job. We need to switch this up.
I think it's a bit of both. You're getting a lot of young people, just like we saw with Donald Trump in the United States, a lot of young people, in particular men, 18 to 29, saying they're going to vote conservative. Like, that's the biggest section. Within that age group, conservatives take the most. Maybe not the majority, but they get the most support at the moment. As you know, that's normally when you're voting more left-wing until you're getting your real, you know, your job with a real paycheck and then going, what the heck?
Yeah.
So there's a lot of movement on that front. I think it's also swing voters, as in both our countries. Elections are decided by swing voters. And we had almost 10 years of Stephen Harper and the Conservatives. And at the end of that, people were sick of his face and went, OK, well, let's give this guy a try. each election, this will be his fourth election, whenever it comes, because we could have an election triggered at any moment, or it'll happen by next October. At each election, he has been losing support along the way as more and more people express buyer's remorse and just decide that, we thought you were going to be good, but this isn't working out.
Is there is there a prominent conservative in Canada that can step up and challenge him? Is there someone that the people look at and say, okay, this is a vision of the future I can get behind? Or does it feel like they have, kind of old, stodgy, stale options?
No, the current leader is a guy in his early to mid 40s. I'm trying to remember. He'd be about 44 right now. He took over about 2 years ago. We have a carbon tax in this country. That's something Democrats in the United States dream of, but have never implemented. Pierre Poilievre is the leader's name, and he's been holding rallies across the country for the last 2 years since he won the leadership, saying, I will axe the tax. And he's been getting more and more people out. And a lot of times it's people who are not normally involved in politics that are coming out. He's growing the pie, as you say. He's figured out that there are a bunch of disaffected people who just don't feel like politicians speak for them. And he's been able to tap into that. So he draws thousands to his rallies. It's not, football stadium-sized rallies, but you're talking 2,000, 3,000, 5,000 people out at a rally as you go across Canada. That's pretty good size. And he's been able to maintain momentum to the point where he's now at about a 20-point lead. So I told you, Justin wow. Trudeau and the Liberals are 21% in the latest reputable poll. He's at Pierre Poilievre and the Conservatives are at 43% in the vote. We have a multi-party system. It's been a long time since any government was elected with more than 50% of the vote. 43%, he's getting close.
Now, as you know, Brian, in America, we have scheduled election dates, right? Like, we know when they're coming up years in advance, and we all obsess about them for 4 years every single time. You guys have that a different approach, the parliamentary approach. I mean, what is Trudeau's thinking here? Is he basically waiting for the moment he thinks he can win, and then he recalls this? I mean, how do they make these decisions?
It's become a bit of a parlor game here to figure out, okay, is Trudeau going to step down and let someone else take over as leader? Because that can happen in our system as well. And he has been leader of the Liberal Party since 2013. He's been prime minister since 2015. I don't care who you are. Everyone gets sick of the face of the politician that's in power after a while. And he's at that point, but he won't leave. He sees himself in messianic terms and believes that he is the only person that can lead them into lead the Liberal Party into the next election and save Canada from the nasty conservatives who will cut the 60% increase in spending that he brought about, who will spread misinformation and disinformation. The guy lies his face off while going around preaching about misinformation and disinformation in every single speech and announcement he has. So if Parliament were functioning properly, the opposition parties would vote to bring him down. And in fact, two of the three have, but he's got this socialist group that he was in a coalition with for about a year and a half. And then that leader realized it was hurting him. He said, I'm going to rip up the coalition. I'm not part of the coalition anymore. But he keeps voting with them. So it's, he ripped up the coalition so he could tell his supporters, oh, no, I'm not supporting Justin, but I'm voting for every single one of his bills. If he loses a money bill like a budget or some, we call it a vote of non-confidence. The opposition can just say, hey, we have no confidence in the government. Call an election. If that passes, we go to an election. If not, it's October of 2025 before we can, kick the bums out, as they say.
I mean, it's always amazing to hear how every country seems to have its own set of issues. Canada, of course, being, our closest neighbor, it really a fascinating thing to watch. I really hope that you guys can get that all squared away because, I felt like there's been a drifting apart a little bit of America and Canada over the past few years because of Trudeau. And that doesn't need to happen. Brian Lilly, his new piece for the Toronto Sun, is advice that Canada should take. For the good of Canada, Trudeau simply has to go. You can find a link to it on my Twitter page as well. Subscribe to Brian's podcast. It's called Full Comment, wherever you get your podcast. Brian, great to see you, man. Thanks so much for coming on back on the program. I appreciate it.
Thank you, Stu.
We'll be right back. Bezahlen läuft für dich sowieso nur mit dem Handy? Dann hol dir doch was von deiner Kohle zurück. Denn in allen Restaurants und Bars gibt's jetzt 5% Cashback, wenn du mit PayPal zahlst. Tap dir mehr mit PayPal. Alle Infos gibt's auf paypal.de. 5% Cashback nur auf Einkäufe vor Ort in Restaurants und Bars in Deutschland bei kontaktloser Zahlung mit PayPal. Gültig vom 2. Juni bis 19. Juli 2026 für die ersten 850.000 berechtigten Kunden. Maximal 15 Euro Cashback pro Konto. Es gelten Bedingungen auf paypal.de.
All right, let's say you're Andy Reid and you have Patrick Mahomes as your quarterback and the team you're playing is blitzing you on every down and Mahomes is burning them over and over and over and over and over again and you know you win, you know, 41-7. And then the next time you're going to be playing them, two things can happen. One, they can learn from what they did wrong and they can adjust their approach. Doesn't mean they're going to win next time, but they can make your life a little bit more difficult. Or they can double down and just say, well, we didn't blitz hard enough. We should have blitzed more. We should keep doing the exact same thing and bang our head against this wall because one day Patrick Mahomes will surely fail. This is what the deciding point for Democrats is right now. They're sitting here like, hey, we blitzed him over and over again. We lost. What do we do next time? And in this particular analogy, blitzing is this sort of crazy woke nonsense, you know, not to mention just wokeness. But, you know, for example, one of the things they tried was this Project 2025 thing. They tried to make this thing, Project 2025, into this big deal. Donald Trump was going to run like a fascist state. Project 2025 is the outline. Now, almost nothing they said about Project 2025 was actually true. And what was it? It was just an effort by the Heritage Foundation, a longstanding conservative think tank, to design a policy playbook that Trump should try to pursue if he becomes president of the United States. It was not Donald Trump's ideas. It was their ideas to try to influence Trump to do them. Trump is not reading a lot of policy papers. That's not what he does with his free time, especially when he's not even in office. So he said, I denounced this. I don't even know what it is. I haven't even read it. Now, several people who worked with Donald Trump worked on this project. And the left tried to make this case that actually he does know it. And this is going to be the central part of the entire administration. They tried this really, really hard. It didn't work at all. Obviously, they lost. They're now doubling down and trying to stick to that playbook. This is the reporting from the New York Times. Trump picks key figure in Project 2025 for powerful budget role. Russell Vought, who would lead the OMB, has spent years building plans to rework the American structure of government in ways that would enhance presidential power. If you didn't spend years of your life thinking about how you would influence the government if you were put in a high position of power, you probably shouldn't be put in a high position of power. This should be something that you've thought a lot about. That's not a surprise at all. And the fact that one guy, there's a couple that are loosely tied to Project 2025 that have had appointments, not all of them, I don't even think even close to half of them. We were told this was his entire plan. Not even half of them. Not even half of these. Most of the people are just guys Donald Trump saw on TV and he likes. Dr. Oz did not write anything for Project 2025. I hate to tell you about that. This one guy came in, now they're like trying to lock themselves into this approach. So, I mean, just they're going to keep bouncing their heads off the pavement quite a bit. By the way, on this note, and I'm going out of order here, but Kamala Harris is telling her advisors and allies to keep her political options open, which is a fascinating, fascinating thing. So she is saying she might run for governor of California. She might, maybe 2028's in the picture for her. She did win that poll, which is basically based on name recognition, that she would be the most powerful or popular nominee for the Democrats. So we will see. If you're a Kamala Harris, a listener, you're working for the campaign, you happen to be paying attention to me today, do it. Absolutely run her. Give it a whirl. Everything's going to work out fine this time. American people will wake up and see her brilliance, I promise you. How can Trump upend electric car sales? This is a fascinating article from the New York Times as well. Largely because they've been telling us electric cars are the solution to everything for a very long time. But now the guy coming into office wants to kill them. They should be on the side of saying, well, the environment's going to explode. But instead, because they don't like Elon Musk anymore, they can't really do that. So they're in a really weird position. Electric cars could fall by 27% if consumers lose their tax break. Now, I was told that people love their electric cars and they were choosing them because they loved the environment so much. But no, apparently this tax break, like we've been saying the whole time, is the real reason anyone's buying these things. Other countries have eliminated such subsidies, have seen 27% sales cuts. You can't make a vehicle $7,500 more expensive and sell more of them easily, said Chris Harto. You don't say. Chris from Consumer Reports. People are only willing to pay so much. I love this, how they try to frame the Elon Musk's part of this. Trump regularly attacked Biden's policies on climate and electric cars. A complete repeal of this tax would require Congress to act, but Trump can act within the Treasury to make the change the tax rules a little bit, make less people qualify for this. Those efforts have support of one of Mr. Trump's biggest supporters, Elon Musk. He says he makes roughly half of the electric vehicles sold in the United States. Musk has called for the elimination of these subsidies for all electric vehicles. He also said the loss of the tax break would hurt Tesla less than it would hurt automakers, other automakers. So there he is, like, he's only doing this because he's being selfish. He's getting rid of this giant tax break for his companies because it will only hurt him less than other companies. That doesn't make any sense. Even Tesla would take a hit, though. Which they might lose a lot of these $7,500 credits. So there you go. Finally, Elon Musk says he did some research for his DOGE, Department of Government Efficiency role coming here in the next few months. He's rewatched the movie Office Space, which is exactly right, because what you need are the Bobs. The Bobs are going to come in. They're going to sit down and they're going to say, what would you say you do here? And when they don't have an answer to that question, the job's out the window. And that's the end of it. Hopefully he actually can stick to that and Trump can assist him through that process. We will see. High hopes, though, for the Department of Government Efficiency. Well, it's the biggest travel week of the year, and looking like some records are going to be set. Strikes, rain, and snow pose challenges during record Thanksgiving travel week. Some 80 million people are set to take to the roads, the railways, the skies, and even cruise ships this week, each making trips more than 50 miles away from home. There's the storms, you got the strikes, you got all the weather, which, of course, makes it difficult no matter what. And then, of course, you have our government, who is getting in the way as usual. They have been doing all sorts of stuff. If you're talking about flying somewhere, thinking about that this week, I might just recommend either you watch Countdown to the Next Aviation Disaster before you go, or maybe wait until after. Either way, take a moment. Go to blazeoriginals.com/stew. If you use the code DEI, you can save $30 off your annual subscription. This is a documentary that I did a few months ago. I flew all around the country talking to experts and people who were involved in the stories, basically looking at the government and how it's handling the FAA and air traffic controllers. Because what you'd think would be the way you do it is you pick the best people for the jobs. What they're doing is something quite different than that, including choosing people based on the color of their skin and their gender, terrible ideas like that. Not to mention not really having enough air traffic controllers, making people work really long hours, using outdated technology, solvable problems not being solved. It's your government in action. You know the basic outline of what they do. But to see the detail is really, really awful. So check this out. It's called Countdown to the Next Aviation Disaster. It's available at blazeoriginals.com/stew. The code is DEI for $30 off your annual subscription. If you happen to have watched it already, I'd love to get your comments on it. If you ever heard some stuff that you did not know was going on, if you have some reaction, drop it in the comments below if you're on YouTube, or put it up on Twitter, twitter.com/stewdoesamerica, or I guess x.com/stewdoesamerica. Put those comments there. Countdown to the Next Aviation Disaster. It's at blazeoriginals.com/stew. blazeoriginals.com/stew. The code is DEI for $30 off your subscription. Okay, so here's what happened. Remember the show MASH? Remember Klinger on MASH? He was the guy who was he was trying to get out of the army and was dressing up as a woman to do so. Listen to this write-up. Klinger, played by Jamie Farr, famously wore women's clothing in an attempt to convince the army that he was mentally unfit for service and should be granted a Section 8 discharge. He remains one of the most memorable and beloved characters in television history. Isn't that transphobia? It is an innovative idea, though. You got to give them that, right? Like, you want to get out of the army, yeah, dress up as a woman. They'll think I'm crazy. I think it's a pretty good idea. And something that we can all learn from. In fact, someone is learning from it in Korea. A guy who was going out and he was going to get into the army. And he received a couple of minor problems when he went through his plan to get out of that service, which was basically just keep eating. So he'd get so fat they wouldn't put him in the military. Too fat to serve. Korean man, 26, sentenced to jail for binge eating to get out of military duty. Now, you might be thinking what I'm thinking, which is, is that what Jeffy's been doing this whole time? Is he just trying to avoid military service? The most brilliant dodge of all time. But that's not true at all. Not true at all. They would never put someone with his criminal record in the military in the first place. So he does not need to do that. But anyway, happy Thanksgiving, Jeffy, and to everyone watching Stu Does America.